kpft.org. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org online. Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig here on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I am accompanied, as always, by my conversational compatriot Egberto Willis, who also does his own show Mondays at 9 p.m., Politics Done Right. We here, on the other hand, do politics okay. I think I annoy him a little when I say that, but it also makes him laugh, so that's fine. it's been an interesting news week. I guess the two biggest stories, it's an open forum, by the way, so you folks can call with whatever's on your mind, whatever news event or personal epiphanies or anything else like that that might be an interesting thing to talk about that you're just urging to get out into the ether. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. So I was going to say the Occupy protests. It feels kind of the same. So the police brutality, police shooting protests, how police handle these things, those are going on. They are persistent. There are people talking about it looking like a new civil rights movement, a new generation of people trying to take this country the next maybe couple of steps forward. I think that that has a lot of positive potential. Needs to be kept peaceful. Needs to be kept peaceful. But, of course, there are always going to be the protest trolls that we have to guard against. At least in the last couple of days, the big news story, the international news story, has probably been the Senate report on CIA torture. And I have to be honest. I'm not saying that it's good news, but I actually feel a little prouder to be an American that it didn't take an overthrow of the government or some kind of a coup d'etat where you had this totally new government, like in the, when the Soviet Union collapsed and they just felt that they had to destroy the credibility of the prior regime. I mean, this, for a country to do bad things and then own up to it, as Barack Obama said, there's never a good time to release this kind of news. You know, you can always find a reason not to. It's kind of like mass shootings, where right after the shooting is not a good time to discuss it. And right after the next shooting is not a good time to discuss it. So there's never a good time to discuss it. But this country, Dianne Feinstein, others in the Senate, including Republicans, not all of them, but some of them, understood that this is something that needed to be done. One of the comments that I have made repeatedly on the air and off the air is I believe that the Bush administration did more damage to this country's long-term interests and long-term foreign policy than almost any other administration, at least in the last 100 years. Since the Second World War, the United States, even with all its flaws and, you know, things that it did that were either not good or maybe not good. I think the United States has had a role in creating a world order that increasingly subscribes to rule of law, international law. I think the United States was instrumental in changing the mindset between pre-World War II and post-World War II about the inviolability of borders. Before World War II, empire was a perfectly respectable thing to do. Annexation of territory was a perfectly respectable thing to do. Every country wanted to do it. Every country aspired to it. And after the Second World War, it like didn't matter that you had a bunch of Russians on the Polish side of the border that entitled Russia to go in and take that part of Poland. That was no longer considered geopolitically respectable. The United States, after the Second World War, was instrumental in certain conventions regarding things like not torturing. So, with all its flaws, and even with all the times that the United States lost sight of the moral high ground in order to gain short-term advantage, I think on balance, the 50 years after the Second World War, the United States was a basically positive influence on the world. And then the Bush-Cheney folks came in and essentially invalidated almost everything that the United States had stood for. We, in a sense, almost became the enemies we had fought in the Second World War. So, you know, you have a country like Japan that still really hasn't come to terms with the crimes it committed during the Second World War in Asia, versus countries like Germany, which have gone further than probably any country in history to accept responsibility for the crimes it committed. And then in modern times, you have countries like Serbia, which really has never admitted it did anything wrong in Kosovo or Bosnia-Herzegovina or Slovenia or any of those places, Croatia. So, you know, this is a baby step. This report that Dianne Feinstein in the Senate was instrumental in getting released before the Republicans took over the Senate and probably would have suppressed it. This is a baby step, but it's an important baby step. Now, there are some interesting potential ramifications here. Will any other government want to indict anybody and have them extradited? And if that should happen, would the United States extradite? Because there are treaties which under certain circumstances would require us to either extradite or try. Another question that's been puzzling me, and I think I know an answer, but I'm not sure, if the president were to pardon people that participated in torture, that pardon might be in effect under U.S. law, but would it have any impact on indictments occurring under international law? So if anyone has a really good answer to that, I'd be interested. I have a feeling that a domestic pardon would not affect international legal commitments, but I'm not sure. We've got a couple of callers. We have open lines still, 713-526-5738. And first caller of the night, Gary, you're on the air. How you doing tonight, Gary?
All right. I have some food for thought for you.
I'm hungry.
Okay, well, it's basically a philosophical question, maybe sociological. I think the West, that is Europe and America, have always demonstrated their proclivity to justice and freedom, and that's why everyone wants to come here, and that's why, you know, we have freedom. You know, I mean, well, I'm not going to get into details. My question is, why... if the West is so progressive and we are making such a change in the understanding of the meaning of humanity and freedom and getting rid of restrictions on women and gays and people of other cultures, why do so many other people hate the West and want to destroy us? Can you explain why we we are trying to be progressive, and certain other people, maybe the Islamic State and other people there, want to destroy the West and keep women in veils and out of school and not let them drive and still kill homosexuals and want to have no Western, as Boko Haram says, no Western education. You know, I mean, Western education brought us the internet and airplanes and automobiles. can you explain this?
I can't explain it. I can speculate on it.
What I'm asking, and this is the tough part, is this like a cultural thing, a genetic thing, a political thing, a religious thing? Nobody seems to ever explain it. Everyone has their point of view, but I can't understand why, if the West is progressive and people are wealthy and happy, why are countries that are poor and unhappy opposed to the West?
I'll tell you what
a hard one, I know.
It is a hard one. What comes to mind, I'm going to start off with a discussion that actually Egberto and Bob and I were having before we came on the air. You know, there's a Star Trek episode called Omega Glory, and there's a scene there where Kirk and this renegade Starfleet captain are tied together by the wrists, sort of like an Indian fight. And the premise is that Kirk is saying one thing and this other guy is saying something else, and they're tied together on the theory that since good always conquers evil, that whoever is telling the truth should win. Upon which Dr. McCoy utters what I think should be the immortal line, "I've learned that evil usually wins unless good is very, very careful." And I think that what that does is sum up the fact that progress is always in dynamic tension against retrograde beliefs. So the very things that we consider civil advances. Now consider that 500 years ago, Christianity wasn't so different from modern Islam. It was intolerant. Old Testament law isn't a heck of a lot nicer than Sharia law. They're very, very similar in a lot of ways. People were burned at the stake if they didn't believe this or that religion that the king proclaimed or the church proclaimed. So Christianity has a really dark history. And what you are talking about is the victory of civil law over religious law. It's the victory of tolerance over sectarianism. And this is a battle you never win. It's a battle you must always fight. There are always people who will find free speech abhorrent. There are always people who will find women's bodies being exposed to the view of men abhorrent. Or for that matter, the bodies of men exposed to men and women abhorrent. There are always going to be narrow beliefs, and there are always going to be people that believe that their beliefs are the only right beliefs, and everybody else just doesn't see it clearly.
So you know what this is? This is basically Stephen Jay Gould's theory of punctuated equilibrium, because they used to believe, that Adam and Eve were created by God, and God created everything on the first six days, and punctuated equilibrium. When they came up with evolution, people said, well, if there's such a thing as evolution, how come every fish isn't a frog, and every frog isn't a lizard, and every lizard isn't a bird? Well, the punctuated equilibrium, that things spurt forward in response to the environmental pressures. And so we end up with everything from spiders to eagles. Well, isn't that true for cultures? Doesn't it seem like certain cultures evolve and other cultures kind of get stuck in what I would call the frozen in time? I think we already had this discussion, that the Judaic tradition is based on rituals from 3,000 years ago, and the Christians from 2,000 years ago, and the Muslims from 1,500 years ago, and we all get stuck in our certain equilibrium, and we never move forward?
I don't think that you can...
You don't think biology has anything to do with this?
I don't mean biology, I mean the
reality of the evolution of life, you know.
I think that when you talk about, first of all, I think the problem with evolution that makes it hard for people to wrap their heads around, I don't want to stray too far, of course, but I think this is important. I think that the reason that some people have so much trouble grasping evolution is that it happens so far beyond human lifetimes. It just doesn't happen on a human time scale
frozen
in most
in time.
Cases.
That's what I said. We're frozen in time. I'm frozen in time. I'm 65 years old, and I like Bob Dylan and the Beatles. My father, he liked Benny Goodman. The kids today, they like Miley Cyrus.
I think what's amazing is I do the
in our own state of mind.
I do the TV Guide crossword, and it's amazing to me how few of the people in shows now I know, but I always get the stuff that's 40 years old. It's terrible. I'm going to let you go, Gary.
Well, wait,
because
you see
yeah.
my point. You're not addressing the big picture.
Well, you're not giving me much of a chance, Gary. Every time I try to speak eloquently, you make a point. So
you speak very eloquently, but you're not making your point. You're not addressing why certain cultures are stuck in the 1500s and certain cultures are in the 21st century. And I think it has to do with education. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. I think that's a great way to leave the point. Because I think
that the point, though?
I think that is the point, and I think that also explains, for example, why you've got cultures that are against things like the Internet, and they're against things like free speech, and they're against things like television. Because as I once heard on a Christian broadcast station, I was doing work in a house, and this woman had this on, and I couldn't ask her to turn it off, but it was annoying me. And... what can I tell you? But I remember this one song. I've never been able to find it on the Internet, but I remember the lyric very carefully, very, very definitely, that you should never be taken in by the in crowd, that the essence of the song was don't be confused by the facts. Anyway, let me let you go, Gary. I'll do a quick station ID, and then I'll get to Matthew.
Oh, no. Respond to my comments, and I'll listen.
Okay, I'll do my best. I'm going to have to let you go. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, and I've got Egberto Willis here. And it's KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. It's open forum. So we can talk philosophically about civilizations, or we can talk specifically about issues. Matthew, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient. Do you have any responses for Gary?
At the end of what I have to say.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to make some comments about your opening statement. I think we started to lose our credibility in Vietnam. And since Vietnam, we have pretty much, let me say, whitewashed Vietnam like it never really happened and tried to find ways to glorify it to the extent that right now, say, for instance, Vietnam ended in 1973. Is that correct?
I believe so.
So if somebody was born in 1963, they were 10 years old when Vietnam ended. So they don't have a clue about what really happened there.
That's generational forgetfulness, Matthew.
Generational never-knowingness also. That's forgetfulness. That's one thing. But as time went on, now, just take... for instance, when I said how we had lost our credibility, and I really don't think that we really got our credibility all the way back from Vietnam. And then we went into this thing, weapons of mass destruction that they never could find, and you know what that led to. And so then we got our first black president now. This is what really messed up things, because the reason we got, my opinion, why we really got this black president, it was supposed to be something, number one, to give us back credibility that we had really changed our ways, but it was also going to give us an opportunity to keep on the direction that we were going, because if you would really look at what's been happening, this guy has carried out the Bush doctrine to the T. In every single thing, he's an escalation in Afghanistan and the whole smear. But overall, it's never been a real secret as to where the torture was. All of that stuff, you know, it's coming out now, like, oh, wow, now everybody's coming forward, you know. But it's never really been a secret.
There are
other countries that got warrants out for the whole Bush administration and the rest.
Well, there aren't whole lot of countries that have done that. I think the total number is two. Well, I'm not saying that's trivial, but it's not like there's this whole bunch of countries that has warrants out for ex-Bush administration officials.
Yeah.
Let me first say this. When you talk about the U.S. having lost credibility over Vietnam, what's really interesting is depending on who you talk to, there is different credibility that was lost. Some people would say the U.S. lost credibility over honesty. Some people would say the U.S. lost credibility over its determination to stand its ground. Some people would say the U.S. lost determination about its ability to fight a war successfully. There are so many different ways that you could make that argument. Now, I will say this. I am absolutely among the first to agree that the United States is not a perfect country. I have said many times before that one of the paradoxes of democratic governments, and that's small d democratic, is they evangelize democracy, but they always seem most comfortable working with dictators.
Yes.
And in a perverse kind of way, it's not smart in the long term, but in a perverse kind of way, it makes sense. Because if there's one thing a dictator is, it's stable and predictable. And every politician in an ideal world likes stable and predictable, as opposed to every 4 years the country's policy changes. Now, in the long term, this is not a good policy because populations remember. But in the short term, it seems like a good idea at the time. But I think that the important thing here is not that the United States has always done right, and it's not that the United States has always done good, but I feel like on balance, we've mostly done good. And I think that the country deserves respect for actually doing a government-sanctioned report on the torture we've done and calling it torture, as opposed to simply having all of these stories and leaks and theories and rumors. This is an official government document. It's backed up by 6 million pages of research in a 6,000-page report with a 600-page executive summary. That is something countries don't do. So now, like North Korea and China, they're trying to make hay out of this. I'd like to see them issue an official government report with 6 million pages of documentation.
Ain't gonna happen.
You know, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, even looking at flaws, all of us as humans are flawed, countries are flawed. The question is, how are they on balance? I think on balance, this is a baby step, but I think it's an important first step, and I think it's something – I think that this report came out at all is something that Americans should be proud of as opposed to embarrassed by.
I understand, and I agree with you totally. The only thing I think from what I've seen – that gentleman before me said he was 65. I'm 76. And I've seen –
I'm 63. I'm the spring chicken here.
You're a little kid. I've seen the evolution of the world for you know, since World War II, even though I was young during that time. But what I see is nothing is really – even this report is still going to be business as usual because the agenda – and, you know, what is the agenda? And this brings into the conversation about the caller before. He wants to know why they hate us. They hate us because we over there are trying to get their resources for nothing. If they didn't have resources, we wouldn't be over there. We wouldn't be trying to make them Democrats. We wouldn't care what they were.
I think there's a lot of
truth to that. If they didn't have resources. The proof is in the pudding. When they were talking about attacking Iran because it had it was trying to make a nuclear bomb, that clown over there in North Korea said, I got one, what you gonna do? Even did some ballistic tests.
Even did nuclear tests.
You know why? Because they don't have no oil over there.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what it really boils down to. Those people are never going to be Democrats. They don't want to be Democrats. They've been fighting for hundreds of thousands of years before they even knew anything, even before America even came into being.
Civil law is...
We're not going to go over there and make those people Democrats, and we're not going to go over there and make them Christians.
No, we're not going to go over there and make them Christians.
Never going to happen.
And, of course, what you consider democracy can vary from culture to culture. I think it was Winston Churchill who came up with the immortal line, something like, democracy is the worst system in the world, except for all those others which have been tried from time to time.
I remember that. Speaking of Churchill, have you ever heard of Melvin Belli?
Yes, he was on a Star Trek.
Melvin Belli used to have a show it was a political satire during the 60s in Los Angeles, and he would have statesmen on his show, and he had...
Melvin Belli was a lawyer. He had a satire show?
Yes. Melvin Belli was the guy who handled Sirhan Sirhan. Sirhan Sirhan, that's the guy who shot the Kennedy boy.
Ah.
Okay? So he had a TV show in San Francisco, and we got it in Los Angeles during the 60s, and he had sitting statesmen from all countries, and he had Churchill on his show once.
Hmm.
Doing the Vietnam thing, and they talked about Vietnam, and it was right in the middle of the civil rights movement. And he asked Churchill, "So Winston, what do you think about the movement that's taking place in this country right now?" And his exact words were, "Jolly good show. It is the only way a democracy can work when its people take it to the street and demand from its government what it wants."
But, you know, I constantly...
Let me tell you the rest of the story.
Wait, okay. All right.
However, when your government tell you the Russians are coming, hold on to your pocketbooks. That was the exact words.
But let me also say this. I would love to know, and I don't know any way to get a statistic on this, I would love to know how many of these people that are dedicating so much time and energy to protesting in the streets bothered to vote in November. And then complain that they're not represented.
So let me.
I would love to know that.
Let me tell you something, sir, that you might not be aware of. There are a heck of a lot of those people would like to have voted, but they were not able to vote because of all of the voting restrictions that's been put on minorities
yes,
in this country.
Yes, but that is not something that has been the case forever.
No, but it was the case this time, for sure.
It was, but what about in 2008? What about in 2006? What about
people
in 2004?
People voted in 2008. Look what happened in 2008. And that's the whole thing. You had this guy.
They had to show up.
Nobody gets to vote. Nobody gets to get nominated, especially for the president, if the powers that be didn't want it. Okay? I know Republicans. I know moderate and conservative Republicans that voted for Obama because they wanted their party back. They thought they was going to get their party back. They thought they was going to get the country back in order. They thought people were going to be prosecuted, people that they thought should have been prosecuted. They thought all of those people that destroyed our financial system, they have the world financial system, were going to be prosecuted. What happened? They got put in charge of the company store instead. Everybody got hoodwinked by this. And I'm a black person myself, okay? But I'm going to say, they got hoodwinked by this black president phenomenon that was supposed to give hope to the world. Never happened.
It is
as usual, and that's what his whole purpose was. He was born to give continuation to the status quo, in other words.
I'm going to have to let you go in a moment, Matthew, but I want to say that one of the important things to always remember when you're talking about a president is a president is not an emperor. He still has to work within an existing power structure. He still has to work with the other party. He still has to work with the civil service. He still has to work with the other states and localities. I think, though, a lot of people, and this is something I've only recently come to really understand better, people don't vote in the non-presidential elections because they figure they're not important, when actually the local elections may be the most important elections they vote in. You know, their congressman, their senator, their mayor, their city council people. But I got to let you go. I got Sam waiting on the line, and I thank you very much for calling, Matthew.
Okay, guy.
Take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and Egberto Willis on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And we do have open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We do have an open forum. So we are kind of talking about this topic about torture report in the United States and its ethics and morals and this kind of thing. But it can be anything you want to talk about. There are still protests going on around the country over police handling of minorities and whatever else may be on your mind. Okay, Sam, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, you said something about if I had anything about, like, Gary. Yeah, I got something to say about Gary.
Okay.
And it looks like, well, I'm also in this group that you're talking about, age group. I'm 66 myself.
So this is an old people show.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And but I did vote in the November election. But anyway, the way Gary's talking, it looks like he lives in, he talks like he's educated, but he lives in an ideal world. And people come here not really for, I think, the liberties and all that. I think they come here to work. I've met a lot of the immigrants that are coming over here to work in Texas and around the country. And they're here just for the money, and they send it back home to feed their families back in the home country, whatever it is. They're not here to get into our elections and vote themselves and
well, they wouldn't
avoid
be allowed
taxes
to.
And all that. But I think the reason other people, the countries don't like us is because they do look up to us, but we fail them, like with the torture when the news comes out. And I agree with you. That's big of us to, you know, own up to something that happened that was bad and say, hey, this has happened. It's bad. And we did it. And a lot of these other countries that are complaining about it are doing it themselves, but they're not admitting it either.
Yeah.
But as far as Gary, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, and I saw the segregation and racism, and I experienced it myself. But when I went to school, everybody, George Washington and all the Americans were perfect, and they didn't do anything wrong. And then,
And I think that does a disservice to history. I think it's important that we understand that humans are flawed. I've always appreciated history teachers that made it really clear that the people we read about in history didn't know what would be on the next page like we do. That these things are not cast in concrete. And just like us today, they didn't know what the outcome would be of their actions or inactions.
Right. But then, like the last caller was saying, Vietnam came along, and I graduated in a bad year, 67.
Hmm.
And it was a bad year for any young, healthy male.
Over 18.
Yeah.
And
as he got out of school, he's going to be drafted.
Yep.
And a lot of my friends, we were conservative in Texas back then. And this last caller saying we couldn't make the South Democratic. Well, in the 60s, the South was Democratic.
And racist.
And racist. And even George W. and Perry were Democrats back then. Until integration came along with JFK and LBJ. But then when the 60s came along, then we started learning the truth about the history. It just started. And as the years progressed, we learned more and more that we weren't perfect. Washington was not perfect, and neither were the rest of our presidents and our heroes that people held up.
Let me give you an interesting example of revisionist history or denialist history. I was once coming back from a trip to Dallas, and I stopped off on I-45 at the Huntsville rest stop. And because it's near Sam Houston University and because it's, you know, Texas, and they had this display inside the rest area of Sam Houston, and the name of the slave now escapes me. But the interesting thing was they talked about this individual. I think his name was something like Justice, something like that. I can't remember. And they were writing how he was Sam Houston's good friend and Sam Houston's loyal assistant and aide. And after Sam Houston died, he was equally loyal to Sam Houston's widow. And I mean, all of this feel-good stuff. And Sam Houston, as slave owners went, apparently was a very enlightened slave owner. But he was a slave owner. And until the end of the Civil War, this guy was Sam Houston's slave. Now, Sam Houston freed him, but he was Sam Houston's slave. And they never mention that word in this rest area, talking about basically how great Sam Houston was and how enlightened he was. And it's another aspect or another example of people with an investment in Southern history being in denial about what the Civil War was ultimately about.
That's right.
And this comes from selective history, that states and localities control their curricula and are very it can be very slanted about what they learn. I have often said that there are three kinds of history, three versions of history: the winner's version, the loser's version, and the truth. The truth is hard to come by in history. It really is. And I think that we do a disservice to our population by not telling a more truthful version of history.
Right. And sometimes the truth hurts, too.
Oh, yeah.
When it ruins your dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Gary was talking about how we're supposed to be so educated in our laws. And he's talking about the Judeo system, the Christian, and then the Muslims. Well, really, the Muslims came first. They're the one that codified a lot of our laws before the Christians did, and they also had the best library in the world at one time.
And oh, you're talking now about during the Middle Ages in Europe when the Roman Empire had fallen and the Alexandria Library had been burned, and basically knowledge was not only forgotten but suppressed, and the Arabs were having their golden age.
That's right, and they went to Spain, and I went to Spain about a year ago and went to Alhambra, and one of the things was there was a Muslim building there that, and the tour guide was talking about the ceiling tiles. They were replaced with the algorithmic mathematical pattern up there. When the Christians kicked out the Moors or the Muslims, they had damaged that ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to replace it too. But they could not figure out the math of the Muslims. So they replaced it, but they didn't replace it like the Muslims had. It was not as nice, the Christian patch job on the ceiling, because they didn't know how to do the math.
You know, here's something to think about. Every time a person uses numbers, they're being pro-Arabic.
Right.
Every time someone learns algebra, they're being pro-Arabic, because algebra actually comes from an Arabic word, algebra. Every time they learn astronomy, a lot of the stars they're learning, they're being pro-Arabic because they're learning Arabic names, like Aldebaran.
Right.
So we owe a lot to the Arabs, but I think like every civilization, it has its ups and downs. Unfortunately, right now, they're going through what I, as a biased, ethnocentric Westerner would say, I think they're going through a dark age. And I think it's proving very difficult for them to get out of it. But, you know, the Christians, the Europeans, went through that for at least 500 years, if not longer. I mean, the Europeans haven't been civilized all that long by modern standards.
Right.
All civilizations go through this. And I guess to get back to Gary's question, it's not really a matter of they hate everything Western. I think it's a matter of you've always got small groups of people that, because of their fanaticism, tend to be very powerful, whereas the vast majority of people are sort of indifferent. They just want to live their lives in peace.
Yeah. And I think Gary hasn't traveled outside the country much to visit some of these countries, some of these people. If he did, he'd realize people are the same all over the world.
People
no matter
are the
what
same
religion,
all over.
What their country, what the political system is.
They believe different things, but they believe them for the same reasons we do.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it's the people in charge that cause the problems, and they have right-wingers back there, too, and liberals, and then that in-between group, I think the bigger group, doesn't care one way or the other.
They just want to be left alone.
That's right.
Sam, I appreciate your call. I've got a couple of other folks waiting. I am going to have to let you go, but I hope you'll call again.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, take care. Okay, we've got open phone lines. Phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And Wayne, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, good afternoon, Mike. How you doing?
Okay. Are you part of the Golden Age Club, or?
Nah, I think y'all are a little ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
I'm not trying to say, you know, hey, no, hold on, don't go.
Because so far I'm the spring chicken tonight.
Huh?
So far I've been the spring chicken tonight. At 63, well, I've apparently been the youngest guy here.
Well, I'm a little younger than you.
Mazel
tov. I ain't going to get my age, but I ain't 60 yet. I ain't 60 yet, okay?
Good for you.
So let's leave it at that,
okay.
All right?
So what's on your mind?
Hey. Okay. I would just like to ask you a question, and
sure,
maybe you can pose it as to what I want to know something. Here in Texas, while we've been being this Republican Party, some people like to think that we've been being this Republican Party and continue to vote this Republican way. Did we by some chance forget about the Dixiecrats here in the South? And the reason why I ask that question is because when the Dixiecrats, when the Dixiecrats couldn't be the Dixiecrats anymore, what party did they
they became Republicans.
They became who?
They became Republicans.
So and I heard a mayor say tonight, and
almost every Republican in the state of Texas that's in office used to be a Dixiecrat.
Okay. All right. Thank you. But I heard a mayor say tonight that he votes Republican, and I would like to say to, I don't want to be disrespectful to my elders. My father raised me better than that. But I would like to, for him to know that, that he might ought to rethink that. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm going to leave it at that. But when you think about what is going on in America now and what's happening, and you see that I seen tonight on Rachel Maddow. I know we're not supposed to say that, but I think we can say that on this radio station. And they had Elizabeth Warren on there, and she was talking about the bill that the Republicans are trying to push through the Senate and tonight, which is supposed to come up for a vote tomorrow. And she asked the question. She says, "Well, there's a provision in this bill that says that the Citibank and basically all the banks." The major banks, I'm gonna call their names: Citibank, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Bank
Wells
of New
Fargo.
York, Mellon. All five of those big banks. They're trying to get a law in now where they're trying to pass it through a bill that has to be done through the funding of the United States of America and for America to pay its bills. And they want this bill to say that all those derivatives that help cause the financial meltdown of America in 2007 and 2008, that they shouldn't, that the American people should pay for them. Now, those same Dixiecrats, that now became Republicans were those same people that didn't want to pay for anything in America. They wanted my people to pay for it off the backs of their strong work. Okay?
Yeah, the conservatives, I don't think the conservatives entirely, and by the way, they're not technically conservatives. They call themselves conservatives. Probably right wing is simply a more accurate way of putting it.
Well,
I don't think that they understand how internally consistent a lot of their beliefs are.
Well, I would like to, Mike, I'm going to let you go ahead on. I would like to call them hate wingers, but then you go ahead.
I've been
on.
Calling them T-Publicans.
Okay, well, but then now, and that's a good
I didn't make that up, though. I caught it from somebody. I'm going to let you go, Wayne. I appreciate your calling. I got a couple of other folks on the line. We do still have open lines. We do still have some time.
Okay.
Take care, guy. 713-526-5738. It's open forum. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. I've got my partner here, Egberto Willis. He's been very quiet tonight, very atypical of him. I guess he feels I'm doing an adequate job. Okay, that's good. Perfect job, he says. Great. Perfect is so hard to come by. Greg, you're on the air. Thanks for being patient.
Doing,
how you doing?
I called you a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's been a while. And I've had some time to think about a lot of different things. So I'll try to make it brief.
Okay.
The last couple of weeks and the last few days, ever since the thing with Eric Garner and Ferguson, the thing I've noticed, and this has always been a dichotomy that I've always asked myself as an American and as a person, when it's your favorite actor, your favorite entertainer, your favorite athlete that you agree with, you don't have any problem with them making a strong stance. But then when it's someone you have a problem with, or you've kind of forgotten about that wonderful thing called the First Amendment, then all of a sudden it becomes almost passé to say, well, gee, they shouldn't say anything. They should leave their citizenship at the door because we want them to entertain us. We want them to provide us an escape. But then they should forget that they have a right as a citizen to speak out on an issue that concerns them. And I'm almost appalled at that, because if this were people that they agreed with, they would be the first ones saying how muffled these people are, how wrong they, you know, how they are being stifled, how they are being censored. Yet, if it's somebody like a LeBron James, they get uncomfortable.
Well,
if it's like the five Rams players a couple of Sundays ago, they get uncomfortable. But when it's somebody they love and they agree with, they have no problem.
Well, I'm going to make two observations to that. One observation, a comment made by Jay Leno, although he's far from the first to make it, is that he tries to stay away from political controversy that people would have trouble saying whether he's a liberal or a conservative or a Democrat or a Republican, because from his point of view, no matter which side he takes, he's going to lose half his audience. That's just a reality. You know, I used to enjoy John Wayne movies a lot more than I do today. I used to enjoy James Stewart movies a lot more than I do today. I used to enjoy Adam Baldwin movies a lot more than I do today. Because when they become identified with political views that I find repugnant, or social views that I find repugnant, it really just takes a lot of the fun out of watching them, no matter how good their performance is. And Adam Baldwin, I got to tell you, I really enjoy his stuff. But what I've learned is he's a character actor. He's not acting. When he plays these crazy gun guys, this is who he is. It's a great role for him. So you're right. And I think that human nature is what it is. The other point you were making, and I can't remember, you see, I got so distracted. We were talking, what, about performances and taking the fun out of it. What was the other point you made?
Yeah, the point I was making is it's kind of interesting when we talk about free speech issues.
Oh, free speech.
First Amendment,
yeah, free speech. Here's the thing.
The same people who argue so much when it's somebody that they disagree with that they shouldn't have a right to speak out as citizens, if it's somebody that they like, they will go to the wall for them. They will go to the mat for them.
But here's the thing.
If it's somebody we disagree
with, First Amendment,
we'll say, gee, they shouldn't say that.
But the First Amendment, all it says is that the government shall not make any laws limiting speech or free assembly. It doesn't say anything else. So to the extent that we as a society believe in free speech, that's a cultural decision. That's a civil decision. Constitutionally, it only means that the government cannot restrict free speech. It means that companies can limit it. It means that newspapers can limit it. It means that radio and TV stations, well, to some extent, can limit it because, you know, they're like public airwave things. But it's only the government, constitutionally speaking. The rest of it is up to us as a society to tolerate speech we disagree with. I'm going to have to let you go because we're running a little out of time here, and I've got a couple of other callers. You have anything you want to wrap up with, Greg?
No, that's it. That's it. I just remembered the quote that Adlai Stevenson had, which is simply this: a democracy is where it is safe to be unpopular.
Good one. I like that. Thank you so much. That's a good way to wrap it up. Okay, Diana, I appreciate your patience. You're on the air. How you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, like, with everything that's happening with Ferguson, with everything that's happening with the free speech and the internet and everything that's going on, it's just really hard to keep all these stories straight. And I'm like, who do I need?
I'm sorry, hello? Okay, we're still on the air, right, Egberto? Okay, so, Diana, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I think we lost you for a minute. I think you were asking probably where should you go for information. Was that the gist of your question? Okay.
Yes.
I would say go to a website where there is news aggregation. So whether it's Yahoo or whether it's Google, go to a website where the main news page collects stories from a lot of different sources. And make it your business to look at different sources, whether it's the Huffington Post or Al Jazeera or the BBC or occasionally even Xinhua from China or Russia Today, RT.com. You got to, you know, I mean, you have to come to some of these sites with a certain healthy skepticism.
I just feel that a lot of our political leaders they're following more of their party rhetoric instead of actually listening to what the constituents need. For example, Chris Christie, with the whole big crate thing, 93% of his state doesn't want, 93% of the population in the state didn't want gestation crates for pigs, and yet he, because of his presidential
aspirations,
he went ahead and vetoed the bill that 93% of his state wanted to be passed.
Well, let me say this. I can't tell you what to go to for news. I can tell you that you need to be very, you have to pay attention to the difference between journalism and blogging. There are opinion pieces and there are news pieces. But over time, what you find is, I find the Christian Science Monitor is sometimes a good source. I go to NBC News and ABC and CBS a bit. I go to the BBC quite a bit. Huffington Post, good opinion pieces, occasionally having good pieces of information. You just have to be diverse. And when you're diverse, on balance, you'll probably be able to sift out more or less the truth. I've got several, as it always works out, toward the end of the show is when I start getting a lot of phone calls. So, Diana, I appreciate your calling. Think about what we've discussed and call back and let me know if it's helped.
I will not, and I won't call you for my hands-free anymore because it seems that we keep breaking up.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate it. Have a great night. Take care. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. You too, darling. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Frank, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want to make a real quick question, actually. Given the recent incidents within Ferguson and with the cop shootings and such, I wanted to know your opinion. I noticed a lot of the public backlash towards these incidents, rioting, protests, blocking highways and such. And I know that in the city, Houston, there was just a small little event that took place. But why is it that we, as Texans, do you think we're not reacting the same way to, the same way people in Ferguson were? Because we do have the same issues with the police.
Well, I think
like everywhere else.
I think when you talk about Ferguson, of course, that's where the event occurred. I think if we had an event occurring in Houston, you'd probably see more activism here in Houston.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's been other events like that in the past. We can't say there hasn't.
And there
have
been protests.
I've never seen any rioting or such, at least in my time.
No, but you see, this is where age becomes a thing. I agree. We had I forget the name. I think it was Matthew, maybe, where he was older than me. And really, as you get older, you do suddenly begin to realize that living memory is a different thing from history. And it does tend to give you a different perspective. I've been in Houston since 1977, and I have seen different incidents provoke protests and occasionally change and introspection. And the HPD has become a better police organization because of it. They're not perfect, but they are a lot better than they were when I first got here. You don't hear as many charges of racism and discrimination and prisoner abuse and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So it's made a difference. And that's all I can tell you. It's just Houston, Texas is a different place. It's a very conservative state. But also, I will keep pointing out that people, statistically, most people in the country self-identify as Democrats. The problem is they don't turn out to vote. That's the difference. That's the
totally
difference.
Agree. Yes.
All right. Take care, Frank. I appreciate your calling. And we're going to go to GF.
Me?
GF?
Yeah. Let me turn the radio down.
Okay.
Yeah, GF, I'm also Frank. But the other guy was already Frank ahead of me, so.
Oh, you see, if I had known that, I would have gone to Gary, because Gary also has already called, and you've already called, but he already called before you. But go ahead, as long as we got you on the line.
No, that's odd, because my full name is Gary Franklin, so I'm both of those people. But anyway, so what the deal is, I participated last night with Don Culberson. I'm sure you know who he is.
Yes, I do.
A town hall. Phone
7th Texas
him.
District.
And because I live in his district, I got a phone call, asked if I wanted to participate, so I did.
Cool.
And basically, I didn't get to ask a question because I got started too late, but I got to listen to a bunch of people. And I want to tell you, the politics of hate and division is alive and well in the United States of America.
Yeah.
After listening to about 50% of the people who called in, it was all hate against, Eric Holder, Barack Obama, any Democrat, everything like that. And let's destroy them, let's defund this, let's tear that up.
And right-wing leaderships have made that attitude okay. Well, people used to be embarrassed to say those sorts of things.
Ate it up. He went right in with it, and he promised to do all he could and everything else. Yeah. He's actually fomenting it.
Yeah,
now,
people.
I voted for John Culberson.
Really?
Because of the the choices that we have. We don't have that much choice. And he does do something that I like, which is try to stop light rail. Okay, light rail is a waste of money.
I agree.
So he's against it, and so because of that, I want to help support him, and I want to give him a chance to promote commuter rail in the Houston area.
What's the difference between light rail and commuter rail for your purposes?
There's a huge difference. But so I just want to comment on the fact that that the politics of division, the politics of hate, that's what's wrong with America.
Yes, sir.
We're being divided.
I agree.
You know, in 1776, they said, "United we stand, divided we fall." And today, I say, "Stand together or fall apart." And that's exactly what's going on in America. We're being divided on purpose. The politicians want to do that on purpose because we can't get together and throw out the bomb.
United we stand, divided we fall. I think that's a good way to end it. Okay, Gary Frank, I am going to let you go, and I thank you for calling, and I'm going to get to Gary, and Gary's going to get the last word. You've got about a minute, Gary, to respond. First and last, I guess.
Well, I had a lot of things to respond to, especially Wayne, thinking that I...
You only got 1 minute, so make it succinct.
Okay, I will make it succinct. Mark Twain was asked one time if he was a conservative or a liberal, and he said, "What's the topic?"
Mm-hmm.
It's called moderation.
Well, it's called thinking, you know, as opposed to sticking to a dogma.
I mean, how can anybody be 100% Republican or 100% Democrat without considering the issues that we have to deal with?
I agree. I think that philosophical bent obviously is important, but I think each issue has to be determined based on its own merits. Okay, I got the music going in my ears here, so I think we're about done. Thank you for calling again, Gary. It's always an interesting discussion.
Thank you for a fantastic show one more time.
Thank you so much.
I
appreciate
it.
Yes, sir.
You need to have a 2-hour show.
Tell the boss. Let's see, that would be Ernesto and Dwayne.
I'll call Dwayne tomorrow, and you need to have a 2-hour show.
Yeah, because everyone calls in the last 20 minutes. It's
and it
so
gets
frustrating.
Really good in the last 20 minutes.
I know. Oh, man. Thank you so much, Gary. I appreciate it. You have a great week.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's it for tonight. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and my friend Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM. And remember, if your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't be trying so hard to suppress it. So when you have an opportunity to vote, go out and do it. Have a great week. See you next Wednesday.
Now is the time of year to think of doing good things. Charitable giving is one of the easiest ways you can give back to your city. Since 1970, KPFT has enhanced Houston. Your tax-deductible pledge at kpft.org ensures the region continues to enjoy the great radio that you have come to love. During the month, we're asking you to consider helping KPFT continue to do the things it does to make Houston a better place. From creating a space for local artists to being the only place to hear vital voices, KPFT gives you one more reason to be proud of Houston. Week one of our year-end giving campaign was positive, so keep the momentum going now at kpft.org. Thank you so much for your generous support this season. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Great music moves your heart and soul, and you can make a difference by donating something, whether it's moving or not, an old car, RV, motorcycle, tractor, or boat, to KPFT's vehicle donation program as this year comes to a close. Since 1970, KPFT has moved your heart and soul with programming that matters to you. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to help out now. Your tax-deductible donation before the new year gets you going, and it makes such a difference at the station that is the heart and soul of our community. So just move on over to the phone and call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org, and we'll make it easy.